Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Hereward Fenton. It's great to be with you today. Now, we're having a little trouble getting on to Syrian Girl. She broadcasts from an unknown location, and I'm really not quite sure what time zone she's in. We've had trouble organising this interview. It's fallen through a couple of times, and looks like we can't seem to reach her again today. Unfortunately, we will keep trying. Meanwhile, we will continue with our unique coverage of world news. And George, you've got a few other things there in your stable of stories from this week.
Sure. One thing that stood out a little, we've got a troika in Australia. We've got Julia Gillard, the Prime Minister. We've got Nicola Roxon, who's our Attorney General, Federal, and Tanya Plibersek, who's the Health Minister, Federal Health Minister. This is an interesting little troika, and each one of these ladies have their own agendas which cross over. Nicola Roxon is the preeminent anti-smoking doyen of this planet. Tanya has her own agendas as well, but they find common ground, and we call these people the local troika. Now, Gina Rinehart, who's daughter of Lang Hancock, who was Australia's wealthiest man at some decades ago, in the 70s and prior to that. I'd met him in the 70s, actually. And he virtually discovered the Hammersley iron ore range by accident, as these sort of things happen. Now, Gina Rinehart is currently the Australia's richest lady. So she has come out into the media saying that the minimum wage in Australia is far too high, and these mining operations that she has can't afford to pay these sort of wages. Therefore, there's good argument to bring in foreign labour at a fraction of the price. There's a lot of holes in that one, a lot of holes. So the minimum wage in Australia is in the order of $15 an hour gross. And with the state of the economy here as it is, it's very difficult to operate with that amount of money. Certainly the cost of real estate has escalated. People are having difficulties trying to rent a room for under $200 a week. And that causes a lot of problems. And food, of course, is just seems to be a luxury. So people are removed from the realities of the logic of the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. And it's very, very difficult. And people who have difficulties, there are health issues, crime issues which are evolving. So the socioeconomic fabric breaks down when there isn't enough dollars to go down to these people, not because they're being overpaid or rorting the system. They're trying to feed people. They're trying to buy hot water. They're trying to send children to school. They're trying to buy a pair of shoes for their children. And when this area is being attacked for very spurious carbon tax issues and very spurious arguments of, I can't afford to pay so many dollars an hour for 6,000 people I want on my mining interests. It's really difficult. And particularly when a Labor government, which is supposed to be ideologically linked to the working classes in this country, as is currently headed by Julia Gillard, follows an agenda which is against the interests of the average person. They know that these carbon taxes and these other agendas are going to hit these people hard. They know it's going to go down onto these areas. Let me just jump off onto Nicola Roxon for a moment. Now, they're trying to ban smoking virtually by stealth in Australia. The tobacco companies used to spend a lot of money on advertising. There was competition there in the major players, British Tobacco and such. Now, there were court cases concerning illnesses and deaths caused by tobacco smoking. Now, payments were being made through the courts. There were class actions evolving. So the government decided that they would force the tobacco companies, they weren't allowed to advertise anymore, so that saved the tobacco companies money. and then we're going to put all these tags on the tobacco, on the cigarette packets, showing this you can die in this terrible manner, and there's a photograph of what's happening there to your body. So a court case where, madam, did you see this packet of cigarettes that you bought? Did you see these horrendous pictures on them of what will happen to you? Well, you can take your little action and leave the court because you've been amply warned. So whatever activities government put forward, the other side of the equation was that the tobacco companies saved money. And shares are still viable in tobacco companies. Certainly their outpourings in Asia justify the operation of these factories. So there's always a two-edged exercise here. And I come back to the carbon tax issue, the emissions trading scheme, where we see this is good for the environment, the Greens are doing high fives, and everyone is thrilled, and it's such a wonderful thing. But behind the scenes there, the person who can least afford it is going to be tipping money into major exercises where some smart boys are going to be making some good money. So we've seen an indication of this with the Kuzu broadcast just that Herald played earlier today concerning real estate. Now, certainly the emissions trading scheme will have further advances for what is called the White Shoe Brigade. I might explain what that means. The White Shoe Brigade was a term that was brought up through people making a lot of money in Australia through not paying tax in previous eras here, and they seem to congregate in these better areas in Australia. And there was a philosophy of wearing white shoes, so the White Shoe Brigade evolved. There was bookwork for companies that disappeared, so that was called the Bottom of the Harbour Scheme, where the accounting records of companies that should have been held disappeared, and this is almost an era pre-shredder, where it was euphemistically indicated that bookwork ended up in the bottom of Sydney Harbour. So you've got this sort of business happening. In past years with the superphosphate bounty, which I alluded to, concerning a lot of millionaires being formed through this superphosphate bounty to improve their land. You had an evolution of Pitt Street, what they called Pitt Street farmers in Australia. Pitt Street is the Wall Street of Sydney. Collins Street is the Wall Street of Melbourne in Australia. So you had all these people called Pitt Street farmers. They weren't really farmers. All they did was have a piece of useless land and collected these bounties from the federal government to put superphosphate on it. And, of course, nothing happened. So, again, the environmental issues which are being introduced in recent years, and the emissions trading schemes, the carbon taxes, we're not going to see good outcomes out of that. We're going to see some terrible outcomes concerning the lower areas of the socioeconomic spectrum in Australia. We're seeing this happen in the United States. A lot of countries in the West that should not have been paying these sort of prices.
George, can I just interrupt your flow there for a minute? Sorry, I know you're on a terrific
roll there. I'm fine.
I'd like to actually just run through some of our Australian news. Look, you know, in this country, we are, I don't know what is going on. What I know is that we are degenerating, we are devolving into a society that doesn't value people anymore. It sort of only values the objectives of the ruling sort of political classes and the corporate oligarchy, that those are the only things that matter. And I just, you know, I want to run through some recent stories about some of the more nanny state measures that they're bringing in. But I also want to raise the question of the deterioration of the quality of our infrastructure. I mean, you travel by train a lot in this city. I mean, we've reached the state where our public transport has become just the most miserable, filthy, degrading experience I mean, what's and can you, you've actually seen quite a bit of this, George. Also, the police harassment and intimidation of people on public transport, coupled with the completely deteriorating infrastructure. I mean, what is going on?
Well, just to bring it to a home issue, State Rail in New South Wales don't really care if anyone uses the trains or not. As a matter of fact, if no one turns up and uses the trains, that's great. They've got less wages, less infrastructure to maintain, so that's fantastic. Yeah. So nobody uses trains, thank you very much. So if we have an agenda where we want people to use trains and be satisfied with the service and get cars off the road and pretend we're actually doing something for pollution, then we would make public transport more attractive to get people to use that. So driving their cars to work is the option for most people. Public transport through buses is not fantastic. The trains are horrendous. You've got there was an argument with the dogs. They've got dogs running around the train stations here in Australia searching for drugs, apparently. So I view that as an harassment.
Coupled with this degradation of the service, we have intimidation and harassment of people who are travelling.
Yeah, that the dog issue came about. Tens of millions of dollars have been spent on training these dogs as a whole centre. A jail, actually, in Sydney was converted to a training centre. Now, the concept of policing by presence, having lots of cops on the street or having them be able to stop you and ask you what's in your pocket and such, so that maintains the essence or the logic of the power base to the average person. They started rolling into nightclubs in an area called Darlinghurst, a gay area in Sydney, and they started harassing people there.
George, let's pick up that after the break. I think it's a really important illustration that you are giving there. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We have been trying to get Syrian Girl on the line, but it appears that she is not contactable. We'll be right back after this break. Stay with us. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
No matter where you go in your life, at some point you're going to need somebody to stand by you.
Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My name's Herwood Fenton, and I'm here today in studio with George Georges. We have had a problem connecting with Syrian Girl, and don't worry, however, we will do this interview, ladies and gentlemen. It will get done. If not live, we'll pre-record it, and we'll have it for you for the next week's show. Meanwhile, we actually do have a lot of stuff to talk about. And you know, the reason why we do this show, it's about information, it's about new information, certainly. But it's also, and the media always has this role, it's about emphasizing and repeating what's important. And it's what we consider to be important. The media does this, but they do it in a way that is co-opted by oligarchies. And the oligarchy wants to own you, control you, exploit you, and sometimes kill you. And the media collaborates in the agenda of the oligarchy in our mainstream media 100%. Actually, I wouldn't say 100, maybe 98.8%. You know, there is that little, story that gets through. There's information that does get through. Of course, there is. And that destabilizes them and they hate it, right? But in order for the media to have, you know, the appearance of being a free media, sometimes real information does actually have to get through. But anyway, I digress. I want to continue now with where we were talking here about the state of our country, the state of our society in Australia, the sort of the deterioration of the quality of life, and I might just raise the point of our massive immigration into this country. It is absolutely staggering. I mean, we've got like 747 loads of people coming into this country every week. You know, I mean, the numbers that we're getting are in the orders of hundreds of thousands of people a year, right? Now, I don't know actually how many 747 loads that is. I'd like to do the calculation. It's probably quite a lot. But these people are just coming in, pouring into the country. We haven't had upgrades to our major rail networks in probably 40 years in Australia. I mean, in Sydney. I mean, it's completely out of control. It's broken down. Trains are cancelled. They keep putting more buses on the road. But of course, then the roads get getting more and more clogged with buses. It's getting really, really hard to get around. But then still, by comparison with a lot of other countries, it's a lot better here in some ways. But the countries that have a lot of trouble with basic infrastructure, like, say, Thailand, for example, it is terrible there. It is very hard to get around. The traffic is very congested. But in a lot of other ways, they don't seem to have this clamp down on the population and this kind of miserable nanny state taking over people's lives. The government there, you know, doesn't put a lot into infrastructure. People don't pay a lot of taxes, and there are a lot of poor people. But the communities there, and this is what I've seen in Thailand, you know, there is more hope in people. There is more vitality in people. And there is fresher food. I can say that absolutely conclusively, that the food in those places is far fresher than what we get, because everything we get is imported, as I was saying here in the last hour. All our food is brought in. Now, George, in the last section there, you were talking about this tendency of the police to invade entertainment zones, to invade people's enjoyment of an evening in a club or a pub or a bar. And you were actually pointing out a little episode that occurred there in Darlinghurst in Sydney, which is actually known as a gay area in Sydney.
Yeah, so there was a harassment there on these gay nightclubs. So the representatives of that community, and they're well placed in government and also in the military, legal industry. And so the police were ordered to stand down from taking dogs into nightclubs and harassing people, particularly in these areas. But in general, they were to not do that. So they started patrolling the streets in front. So in front of these busy nightclubs in Sydney, you've got probably a queue of people waiting to get in. The licensing requirements inside might say that only 300 or 600 people are allowed in there at any one time, and they're being clocked going in. So as people come out in these busy places, others are allowed in. So we had the absurd situation of patrol dogs running up and down and sniffing the people standing in queues in front of the clubs. So that was taken away as well. Now we've got an invasion in the railway stations and the bus terminals, and particularly the major railway stations. Now, they were also instructed not to do that, but I note that they do it anyway. There was a media release concerning the police will not be taking their drug-sniffing dogs into railway stations. That's, you know, fine, but that didn't eventuate. Now, I see about, I travel by train because I like trains, but that's probably another mental problem I have. But anyway.
I like trains in principle.
They've got wonderful history in that. Unfortunately, Indeed. We don't get a good service in these countries, and they're not being properly used for correct freight. Not like what I mentioned with the bakken oil and the coal in the US and also here, but they should be used for correct freight movements, and they are a serious way of moving people, passenger rail. Another issue. Now, so they've started to invade the railway stations. I see constantly young people are stopped and searched. They've got open warrants in Australia. They don't actually, America's a little bit freer than we have here. A lot of things are being trialed here. So the policeman can stop you in the streets and virtually ask you, empty your pockets, take your clothes off, excepting your shorts, and we'll search your clothes, and then we'll drop your wallet on the ground. After we've decided what's happening here and fiddle
now,
around with your
mobile.
Part of the
problem is, in Australia, we don't have, like, the Constitution
that says
unreasonable search and seizure.
Yeah.
We can't invoke the Constitution. It is still against the principles of universal human rights,
yes,
which we are a signatory to. But is there anything in our Constitution, George, that gives us protections against that sort of thing?
No, not in interpretation. These matters were not foreseen. The Constitution's an agreement between the people and their our servants, and they tend to break down due to interpretation and mutations and tractions of power bases. The what we have in the English legal system is the protection of common law, which as against equity is the basis of how our rights have been evolved through the common law.
Yes.
But that also is another area which is not as strong as having a written document. These environmental issues and the ecology, these matters that have been brought forward, they're not in our constitutions. They're not in our basic common law. So there's interpretation there. In Australia, we've got executive orders being perpetrated on us. In America, that's permitted through the presidential, through the president's office.
Can I just interrupt you there? What do you think? How should people deal with this? See, again, I want to emphasise the fact that democracy is not a passive thing.
No.
Freedom is not gained by sitting back and help expecting people to make you free. No, you have to make yourself free. Now, what can and what should people be doing in the case of the sort of tyranny that we're seeing in our train stations with, as you say, people being randomly strip searched, you know, in front of, you know, just out in public?
Yeah.
How should we be responding to that? What should we do?
Well, perhaps people should refuse. In the early instances, I'll be taken to the police station, strip searched. That's fine. If enough people do that, then they're not going to be able to cope with it.
Yes, you don't make it easy for them.
No,
you don't just bend over and make it easy for them to rob you of your rights.
You're not attacking police. You're not becoming violent. You're not objecting. You're just making it manpower excessive for them. Governments defeat you by the costs to you, them being able to
remember that, ladies and gentlemen. Governments, you defeat the government by making it difficult for them, and that's the power we have, to make it difficult for them.
The two weapons
you
have.
We are going to break, unfortunately, George. Sorry to cut you off again, as I always do. We are going to break. We'll be right back. We've got some important stuff to cover. Stay with us.
She said she learned the hard way. Said she wanna spare the children. She said don't give a say your soul away, 'cause all that you have is your soul. So Don't be tempted by the shiny apple. Don't you eat of a bitter fruit. Hunger only for a taste of justice. Hunger only for a world of truth. Cause all that you have is your soul.
Hi, with Truth News. It is absolutely wonderful to be able to do this show. I'm greatly honored to be able to speak to people around the world in this format. It's a conversation, you know, it's a dialogue. And, you know, if you'd like to join the dialogue, you're most welcome to call us. We've got some call-in numbers here. The Australian call-in number is 1-300-153-372, and that's a local call cost if you'd like to call in. And the US call-in number is 512-646-1984. And you can get all our podcasts and archives if you just go to the website. If you want to listen to the live stream, you click on the live stream option there on the homepage. Look, we're still, apparently we can't reach our Syrian girl, but don't worry, that interview will be coming. It will be in one of our shows in the next couple of weeks. I'd actually, in lieu of the Syrian girl interview, I'd actually like to play you here a clip from the BBC. And this is one of the rare instances. You know how I was saying before that, you know, 98.8% of the time the truth doesn't get through. Every now and then a little bit of truth does sneak through. And this story from the BBC, Syrian rebels try to use prisoner for suicide bombing. This one slipped through, although from what I read, it was then removed from the BBC and is no longer available on their news site. But someone in the meantime downloaded the video and re-uploaded it. And, oh, it's actually Syrian Girl. I'm looking at Syrian Girl's channel here, and it is on her YouTube channel. So I'm going to play you the clip here. It's about 2.5 minutes long, and then we'll just analyze it a little. Here we go.
A bomb being prepared on the back of a truck. The target, a nearby Syrian government checkpoint at the entrance of the city of Aleppo. This video was shot by reporters for the New York Times, who spent 5 days with a group that fights under the banner of the Free Syrian Army. The group call themselves the Lions of Tabweed and say they'll accept nothing less than the end of the regime of President Bashar al-Assad. This 52-man unit is led by a former accountant and is becoming increasingly organised as the bloody battle for the city of Aleppo continues. They've taken over the abandoned flat of a police captain loyal to the regime, who's left his personal possessions behind. As well as the family photos, they're also enjoying the luxuries he once had. At their base, the group have a prisoner. They say he's a member of the Shabiha militia, which is loyal to the government, and that he's confessed to carrying out killings. He bears the bruises of a beating, it's said from those who'd held him before tonight. The rebels appear to be treating him well, offering him cigarettes and a shower, and he's told that he'll be released as part of a prisoner exchange. Blindfolded, he's driven towards the city. He's told all he'll have to do is drive the truck towards a government checkpoint. What he doesn't know is the truck is the one that's been rigged with a 300-kilo bomb. The rebel fighters intend to detonate it remotely when he approaches the checkpoint. He's being tricked into being an unwitting suicide bomber. But the fighters return disappointed. When they press the detonator, the bomb failed to explode. The New York Times journalists who filmed all of this say that at the time, they were not aware of the rebels' intentions. Using prisoners as suicide bombers would certainly be considered a war crime. And whilst those opposing President Assad have said they respect the rights of prisoners, this video shows what some rebel fighters are willing to do. Gordon Carrera, BBC News.
Well, there you go. It's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, I love the sort of calm, deadpan way that this is presented. You know, the prisoner was beaten, but then they gave him a cigarette. And, of course, he wasn't beaten by these rebels. He was beaten by some other rebels. And, you know, they treated him very nicely. and gave him a cigarette, and they said, you know, you can now go back to your people. And gee, but they just happened to put a bomb in the back of his car. I don't know. I find the tone of this story incredibly weird. And of course, it was, according to Syrian Girl here, it was pulled from the BBC because it is rather against the official line. The rebels aren't supposed to be doing this kind of thing. But of course, as we know, and I've got half a dozen stories here, they're doing it on a scale that is just absolutely staggering. I mean, we've got leaks here from the Arabic newspapers that I'm just going to try and find this one. NATO plot to use ambulances as a cover for humanitarian intervention in Syria. A source claims that NATO powers in coordination with Saudi Arabia are putting the finishing touches to a false flag plot to frame President Bashar al-Assad's forces for launching a chemical weapons attack as a precursor to a NATO intervention, which will use ambulances as humanitarian cover for a military assault. The source told Syrian news channel Ad-Dunya that a Saudi company had fitted 1,400 ambulance vehicles with anti-gas and anti-chemical filtering systems at a cost of $97,000. That's a lot of money. Woo! That's amazing, isn't it? $97,000 each in preparation for a chemical weapons attack carried out by FSA rebels using mortar rounds. A further 400 vehicles have been prepared as troop carriers. The attack will involve the use of white phosphorus, sarin, and mustard gas, and will be launched on a heavily populated town near the Syria-Jordan border, after which vehicles will pour in under the cover of humanitarian aid. The ambulances will be emblazoned with the slogan Syrian People's Relief and will operate under the guise of an aid mission to help the victims of the chemical weapons attack, but in reality they are nothing short of armoured personnel carriers. And of course the plan will be then to blame the chemical attack not on the Syrian rebels who actually conducted it, but on the government. And that then of course will provide the justification, the final push, the final, you know, agonising decision that President Obama will have to make, because we really just can't put up with chemical attacks. And he'll say that, you know, we have held restraint. We've practiced restraint here. We didn't want to intervene in Syria, but this terrible, terrible use of chemical weapons against their own people, unfortunately, we can't stand back. It is our duty and our responsibility to intervene. Your take on that, Mr. Georges?
Okay, I picked up some United Nations data this morning. I'll just give it to you raw as it is.
Yes.
This is UN figures. I'd say they're slightly low. 3,000 people have been killed in the month of August so far in Syria. There are 170,000 people, according to UN data, have fled to Turkey, Lebanon and Jordan. Turkey is taking in at the moment something in the order of about 5,000 people a day, and there are 1.2 million homeless people in Syria at the moment. So I'm wondering where the humanitarianism is really. So just
it's
as well,
only there when we want it to be there.
Seems like a convenient thing. I remember the words democratic and republic were used in the names of North Korea and East Germany. So those words started to lose traction with reality. And as I had said previously, the Peace Prize. When it went across to Le Duc Tho and Kissinger, and I think it was 73, and then 2007 to Al Gore and the Climate Gate people, then the word peace seems to have changed in definition. So today we see again the words humanity, humanitarianism, and peace and democracy being misused. So words are being played with. Definitions are changing. if we run along the street with a clipboard and ask people what these words mean, they'll give us some preordained tutoring. They'll tell us what they saw on television the night before. They'll redefine words for us. These are not the normal meanings.
You know, George Orwell predicted all this.
Yeah.
It's in his essays. There's a great essay that he wrote, which obviously informs his books, and it was a large part of 1984 when they redefined language. But George Orwell, you know, having been part of military intelligence, or I believe he was somehow connected to MI5. I'm not quite sure exactly his background there. I know that George Orwell is not his correct name either. He understood the psychological warfare. He knew it in depth. He knew it as an insider. And this attempt to change the meanings of words is one of the most frightening aspects that we're seeing now in the modern world. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, the dumbing down of society, it comes from schools. It comes from young people. It comes from the home. It comes from diversions for entertainment that we see in mass media. There's a dumbing down. I was reading...
George, we'll have to pick that up after the break. We are heading to break. We've got one more segment left in the show. You're with Truth News Radio. We'll be covering some more breaking news and insights. Stay with us. You're on Truth News Radio Australia.
Seems to me like they want us to be afraid, man. Maybe we just like being afraid. Used to it at this point that it's just a part of us, part of our culture. Security alert on orange. It's been on orange since 01, G. I mean, what's up, man? Can a brother get yellow, man? Just for like 2 months or something? Goddamn. Sick of that. Mic check. The groove is thick, so I'ma rhyme like a lunatic. I do this shit with an unassuming wit. The corporation conjured up the bass and the tempo. My name is Liv, that's the intro, now let's go. The flow of life throwing strife.
Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to have your company today. I've got a couple of stories here to talk to you about in the Australian landscape. Cartwheels and handstands are now banned in Australian schools, but apparently the government has washed its hands of the matter. A Sydney primary school's ban on unsupervised handstands and cartwheels is a local decision that has been blown out of proportion, according to the state's top education bureaucrat. This was actually on the cover of the Daily Telegraph, which is one of our main newspapers here in Sydney. Kids banned from doing handstands. Again, it's just another one of those kind of invasion of rights, putting cotton wool around kids, preventing them from just doing anything that might be considered dangerous. It probably was blown out of proportion. I just thought I'd bring it up here. Another story here from recent news is a multi-party report is making the call for on-the-spot AVOs in Australia. Police must be given the power to arrest suspects on the spot to issue them with apprehended domestic violence orders, according to a multi-party report. A New South Wales Upper House committee has called for the Crimes Act to be toughened to better protect victims of domestic abuse. The committee said that the law should allow police to arrest and detain aggressors immediately. It should also allow third parties to apply for orders on behalf of someone who is physically or mentally impaired. Another one of the 84 recommendations urges the government to allow police ranked sergeants or above to issue ADVOs. Now, of course, the purpose of this is to allow the police to immediately designate someone as being under an AVO without a court order and without any kind of formal notification process. Now, the opportunity for abuse of this is just staggering. I don't know what you think, George, but I mean, you know, basically I could accuse you of harassing me, right?
Well, I did that anyway, you know that.
Well, I do. That's why I watch you behind the screen.
Well, yeah.
And the point is that under the new system, all I have to do is make a phone call and say, oh, he harassed me, touched me inappropriately, right?
Yeah.
And then suddenly you would be under an AVO with no no further notification to you other than that, you know, you might be arrested, right, straight away. You could be arrested if you were actually in proximity to me, right? And you wouldn't even know what's going on. They just say, oh, you've got an AVO on you, mate. You know, you come in without sport. That's what they'd say, right? The police always call you sport.
Oh, yes.
That's an Australian term, yeah.
Yeah, in England, I think it's a low, a low. But anyway.
Yeah, I think you come in with us, sport. and they push your head down into the police car. They always push your head down, don't they? Push it down.
Make sure you don't bump your head.
Yeah, they're very kind, very kind.
With the AVOs in apprehended violence order, which is a domestic violence order, it came about through domestic violence within homes and how one spouse would take out an order against the other one to sort of behave properly. The parties appear in court, and they're usually given for a 3-6 month period, and they may be extended after that, where one person wants the other person to stay away from them for periods of time because they're harassing them in some way, but that, of course, doesn't solve any problems. It's just if they break the order, then they can be locked up. But they have an opportunity to go to court to argue that why should that happen. Now, this was, of course, everything in law is two-edged sword, everything. Now, this was used by spouses were having disputes in divorce actions where hubby would go to a particular restaurant on Friday nights and wife would not go there. She would go somewhere else, but she knew where he would be on a Friday night. So she would go there, and then as soon as he arrived, she'd phone the police and say, he is within 400 metres of me. Have him arrested, please.
Yes.
So this situation was occurring. It became a source of amusement in England. Under the Blair administration, there was these orders against children were brought in. On the quiet, of course, but they were implemented. There was a television show in England, a successful little legal show called Rumpole of the Bailey, which was quite entertaining. One of the paperbacks that came out of that played on this particular issue of AVOs being issued against children, and the story took a turn where a child was kicking a football up a quiet street in a suburban area during the day, and some lady complained, and the child had to was issued with an order and couldn't go there again and such. It's an interesting little story, but it outlines what
on the spot curfews. Yes,
yeah, on the spot things.
This has been done in Melbourne too. On the spot curfews can be issued to individuals, so it's like you, Sonny, are not allowed in this area after 7 p.m. And if we catch you, you're going to be taking a little ride in the truck.
Yeah. Yeah,
they drive them around in those trucks for hours, don't they?
Yeah, there's we've had deaths in custody in transit situations where people have died in the trucks from various causes, including heat and suffocation and such. So there's it's quite an interesting situation there.
Indeed.
It's to do with the power base, the demonstration of the power base, the fact that they can walk around and no one will challenge them. They can grab a youth and strip him to his shorts, as I've seen a couple of times in the last 2 weeks.
Yes, indeed,
railway stations.
Yeah.
And drop the wallet on the floor and hand him back his mobile telephone after they've been playing with it and just walk off. They don't want him anymore. So that's the end of that. What does he do? Sue them for harassment. Who's going to be able to afford that? Their targets are soft. They've picked particular people. The reason is to demonstrate the power base. It's a display. It's not to do with an actual arrest or someone has been suspected of carrying drugs in or out of a railway station, for example, which itself seems to me not to be logical, but
it's
anyway.
Really for the show. It's for the demonstration. It's for the pompous kind of, you know, in your face.
Yeah. It's the power base. It's the power base. We are here, folks, and we are over empowered and we're allegedly over resourced. But if people peacefully object, they're going to run out of police. They're going to run out of jail space. But people won't do that. They don't want their time interrupted. The only weapons we have is information. which is like this program. Information is a weapon. That's what we have, knowing things. From there, we can waste their time. We can waste their resources. We
can waste their money. Yes, and you made that point earlier. And let's reinforce that again. Our weapon is not violence.
No.
Because violence will not help us.
No.
Violence will only... It's like when you stir up a hornet's nest. You know, you charge into a hornet's nest and stick your hand in there and try and grab the hornets. No, you will get into a lot of trouble if you do that. It will make them, attack you, right? And they want that. In a sense, the forces at work that are the forces of tyranny love it when that happens. And that's why they do engage in false flag. They engage in false flag because actually people are, on the whole, not aggressive. And they need signs of aggression in the population to justify building up their force and building up these displays of force. If they don't have the odd false flag, would you agree, George, that that's actually why they do false flags? Yes. Is because people on the whole are quite peaceful, and in fact so peaceful that there really isn't much of a problem.
It coalesces action in a direction where they can be tutored or guided. We are not violent people, we're not aggressive, we're not going to be shooting up governments and such. We are not in that light. We have a moral position which is above that of what the government postures to us. But our weapons are information. This is really critical, folks. It's eternal vigilance, and our weapons are information and resources, wasting their resources.
Remember,
think about how you do
it.
That.
Mark that point.
That is all we have, folks. That is all we have. The ballot... vote, the candidate, this policy, that policy, it's all nonsense, because government is an administration, what the people you vote for as government is an administration that sits over the reality of government, and they don't permeate. They rarely permeate.
We've only got 2.5 minutes left.
Yep.
At the risk of digressing, I want to get this in, and I'm gonna hit you with a... left field.
You always do. Actually, all these questions are left field, folks. Yeah. Everyone.
Our last 2 minutes of the show, we're going to just get into some kind of fringe territory here. What do you think about the Apollo moon missions?
I have a problem accepting. I'm not saying America landed on the moon or they didn't. I have a problem accepting the information that's available to me. So I'm not going to down one path or the other. So it's like chemtrails. I'm not going down one path or the other.
Nice balance.
I need
yeah.
more information
yeah. Yeah. Cautious,
to convince
cautious
me.
Position.
So I'm not standing on a position. At the moment, I have difficulty in accepting that Neil Armstrong walked on the moon. I have a difficulty accepting that, but I'm not downing the issue, but I can't quite accept it. So.
Now, of course, the man died last week.
And, sure.
May he rest in peace. He was a very quiet man all his life.
Yep.
Only gave a few public speeches, apart from that immediate press conference after in 1969, after the Apollo 11 mission. Very rarely spoke to the media. I just do want to point out, though, I do have a story here from The Telegraph from 2009. The moon rock given to Holland by Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin is fake. Now, it says here that curators at Amsterdam's Rijksmuseum, where the rock has attracted tens of thousands of visitors each year, discovered that the lunar rock, which is valued at £308,000, was in fact petrified wood. And this rock was given to the Dutch Prime Minister by the Apollo 11 astronauts in 1969, and it is a fake rock, a fake moon rock. It is actually petrified wood. Now, regardless of whether or not you believe in the Apollo moon mission, that's just an interesting bit of information which appears to be verified here. We are running to the end of the story, to the end of the show. I'd like to do some more shows on the Apollo moon missions. We had some great shows we did a couple of years ago, and we're going to get back into those at some point. We're signing off for this week. It's been great to have your company. I hope you've enjoyed it. See you next time. See you, George.
Thank you. Bye.